app was recently launched by the AIDS Education and Training Center, the AETC, and it's a fantastic tool for ensuring your patients have access to the best standard of care. I encourage you all to check it out. And remember, health is a human right.
Fighting for survival is such a boring battle. Wanna get into my car, I wanna drive out to Seattle, where the used record stores have much better prices. But I don't have a car, and I don't have a license. Should I take another walk to the DMV? Get another learner's permit with a picture of me? I'd put it in my wallet along with my $4, and the condom that's still in there that has probably expired. I'd leave home for New York, but New York is where I'm from. I'm just looking for a way to feel my life has begun. Living in the city where I'm working like a walrus, but man, I don't need your money, man. I'm gonna be an artist, and I'm feeling like I wanna do whatever I feel inside. I put it all on paper, and I'll hope that people buy it. And my only minor worry is how to pay the rent, but that won't even matter when I lose my apartment. And I'll really have no worries. I'll be just like a cassette that you've taped up the tabs of to put something new on.
You're
it.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
This is Constance Sharp of Rock to Recovery and co-author of the book Rock to Recovery: Music as a Catalyst for Human Transformation with Les Gear, asking you to tune in to KBOO on Monday, November 22nd at 11 p.m. for Eclectic Pandemic here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio. Of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm Jamie Partridge, your host this evening, and tonight we'll be talking about Strike Solidarity, a how-to guide for community allies. Our guests this evening are Gabe Erbs, longtime labor organizer among healthcare workers. Hey, Gabe.
How you doing?
Hey. All right. And Laura Wadlin. Usually co-host on this show, but tonight she's appearing as co-chair of Portland Democratic Socialists of America and secretary of the Portland Community College Federation of Faculty and Academic Professionals. All of us on this show are members of the DSA, Democratic Socialists of America, and participated in two recent DSA-led solidarity campaigns. The 40-day Nabisco Bakers strike, and the Kaiser Healthcare Workers almost strike. We often hear that a strike is the most powerful weapon of workers to win improvements in their wages, hours, and working conditions. So what makes a strike so powerful?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, right off the bat, I'd call out three pieces that are important to a strike. The first is, I think, what most people are sort of innately aware of, and that is people who do the work, right? Managers don't actually do the work that any organization or company functions on. And so when workers come together and withhold their labor, they are shutting down that organization. It becomes sort of in name only. And so that's the reason that it's powerful, you know. Like the second piece is it brings the public into the dispute in a really meaningful way, know, companies rely on closed doors to exploit people, and a strike creates a spectacle that throws those doors open and allows the community to see what's actually happening, you know, in a workplace. And then I think the third piece is it resets the table. You know, within our culture in this country, within labor law, legal norms, there's a lot of power just handed out by the state to employers. And a strike sets the table for workers to use their leverage and have significant influence over operations. And that kind of power carries on even after a strike is over.
I just add that a strike is something that the employer class can't ignore. If you can't bring your kids to school, if teachers are on strike, if nothing is getting delivered to stores or any other place around the country, if the, you know, for example, if UPS goes on strike or postal service workers go on strike, if production just stops, that's not something that even the most powerful class, the capitalist class, can do much about. And so that forces at least a response, and often forces a victory for the working class.
All right. So when we, that's myself, founded the Portland Jobs with Justice chapter in Portland 30 years ago, the primary goal was to turn out community allies to strike picket lines. And our pledge was to come out 5 times a year for someone else's struggle besides our own. Of course, back then there were more picket lines than there are now, but what's important about working class people coming out for each other's picket lines?
Yeah, Laura, you wanna go?
Well, for me as a union member, it's really important for my coworkers to see other unions going on strike, because I think there's some pessimism and hopelessness that we experience every day. And it's not just me in my workplace, it's everybody. And there is something transformational about joining other people on the picket line, hearing their stories of what they've gone through at work, realizing how similar it is, even if it's a completely different industry, completely different city, completely different workforce. It's really remarkable how similar the struggles are. And then seeing that if you are brave and united, you can actually change things. And I just don't think there's any other comparable experience like that for regular working class people.
So why is strike solidarity so important to DSA? And what's the strike solidarity connection to the Socialist Project?
Well, for too long, I think the socialist movement and the labor movement have not been closely aligned. And I think the work that we did to orient towards these massive and, you know, socially, politically powerful strikes was part of socialists reorienting to labor as central to our project as socialists. And I think, you know, back to the point Gabe was making about education, most people in this country aren't in unions, have no opportunity to go on strike, and that of course includes socialists. Even socialists ourselves who talk about, you know, a lot of these Marxist concepts of production and you know, things like that, we ourselves don't actually get to experience our own power as working class people. And so it's necessary to bring both union, but especially non-union socialists into a struggle where we are actually at the capitalist doorstep waging the battle right there. Because without that, we, I think, get lost in other struggles that don't move, that don't advance our project as much as we wish they did.
Yeah, I think there's, absolutely agree with Laura's remarks. I think there's an instinct sometimes in the left to constantly reinvent the wheel. And I get that impulse because no one's happy with the status quo in our political economy, in our society. But I think that there's something important here in saying that labor unions are already organizations of masses of workers. Imperfect, flawed in many cases. But if we as socialists say we want to build organizations that amass workers around a common interest, and that is fighting the ruling class. It's always been a little odd to me that there isn't a deeper and fuller embrace with the labor movement. I think that's really starting to shift in our organization, which is exciting. But I think, again, as much as some of these labor organizations have flaws, and gosh, any organization does, we also have a lot to learn. You know, this is where this is really the only place in our society where working people can experience democracy in a meaningful way. You can't say that around our electoral system, other than maybe in the margins, right? In a non-union environment, our bosses are extremely authoritarian. And, you know, I think people often struggle in the context of family life as well with authoritarian tendencies. Unions are, democratic. Right, they operate democratic workplaces, and I think it's extremely important for us to learn the benefits and flaws of that, in the context of our work.
And let me just add, as a socialist, that the struggle for workers' democracy, that is, workers' democratic control of our working conditions, is the socialist project. is the center of what we're trying to accomplish. And of course, we have to build power and struggle with the ruling, the owner class, to get there. But this is an essential part of that. And it's a rehearsal, shall we say. A strike is a rehearsal for that taking power from the capitalist class.
Can I add one point on that, Jamie? I think you make a great point that's worth speaking on. When we're talking about intervening and hitting the ruling class where it hurts, you know, we have to be looking at the sectors which are critical to the daily function of our economy. You know, Laura talked about UPS and logistics. Healthcare is right up there. It's a basic and core human need. And it's one that has been excessively transformed into a means of exploitation, both for people as patients, but also for the people that do the work. And I think that when we engage with healthcare unions in particular, when they're on strike, we are in community with people who are experts on this form of production. They are experts on all the contradictions that are obscured by the ruling class and the way they operate our economy, particularly in healthcare. And so I just think we have so much to learn from people actually doing the work. And it's, I think, a way we address that without arrogance is to meet them at the strike line.
Great. So DSA brought members to the Nabisco picket line and led the organizing of 5 weekly solidarity rallies, several boycott brigades, and a GoFundMe and strike fund. And what was the importance of these various particular solidarity activities?
Well, it's amazing how much just being there on the picket line changed the morale and consciousness and spirit of the people on strike. There was a woman at Nabisco who had seen me there for weeks. And one time she asked me, "Why are you here? Like, is this your job? Like, are you paid to come to the picket line? Like, who are you guys?" And I think it's because there was just no expectation that their fight with Nabisco Mondelez would ever be connected to other people in the city, that, you know, they felt like they're on their own. You know, it's just the workers in this one place against this one company. But it was very clear throughout the course of the strike that having consistent, surprisingly high turnout and presence from community members that they'd never met before, that allowed them to see their struggle as part of a bigger struggle, a war, a class war. And many of them described it to me that way at the end. They said, well, yeah, this is war. And they realized that they were being, that they were soldiers in that for this particular battle. And the people that they met, you know, they met other union members and they committed to joining those other union members on the picket line. If you know, when they go on strike, for me, for the Teamsters, for UFCW, for all the other unions that came out. And so, you know, I think a lot of the actions we did were powerful and, you know, made a splash in a great way, but I just don't think anything comes close to the basic being there with people, making relationships, and just saying, yeah, your fight is important to me, I'm gonna be here with you, and I'm gonna celebrate the fact that you've chosen to fight.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I think, yeah, absolutely, certainly agree. You know, I think just to explicate a couple of those points, you know, when we were bringing community leaders, organizers, rank and file activists together to plan strike solidarity ahead of the strike of Kaiser Healthcare Workers, we had strike leaders from the Nabisco strike join us at a number of points during those calls. So, you know, there is a transformative property here, right? Where, you know, the strike elevates, I think, people to their highest capacity, their most noble cause. And it goes both ways. And I really want to credit the rank and file leadership and the elected leadership within OFNHP, because on multiple occasions, they did dispatch a contingent of union members to the Nabisco strike line.
OFNHP is?
The Oregon Federation of Nurses and Health Professionals, one of the unions at Kaiser, which almost went out on strike recently. And it was great. You know, I debriefed with them a little bit afterward, and what I heard was, wow, what we do is so different, but what the employers are doing to us is so similar. And we've seen these themes come up, you know, as Striketober has erupted, a Strikesgiving, we'll see if Strikesmas happens too across the country, but, you know, forced overtime, two-tier systems when the employer tries to implement worse benefits for new hires, an effort which seems okay if you can protect what you have, but just poisons solidarity and weakens unions in you know, in a perpetual sense going forward. And then just disrespect, right? You know, we're still in a pandemic where hundreds of thousands of people have been killed, and a lot of people have been killed by their employers' refusal to implement basic protections at work while still expecting people to produce. And that has been true in snack and cookies manufacturing, and it has been true in healthcare. And I think the role of an organization like DSA is never to preach, but to organize, to bring people together around a common interest so they can make decisions that go beyond their enterprise, go beyond their company, and signal participation in a wider struggle, a class war, as Laura said.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Glaber Radio, KBOO Portland. Tonight's guests are Gabe Erbs and Laura Wadlin of the Democratic Socialists of America.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I'll just call out, right, that in the the employer-derived labor law landscape in our country. It's not protected activity for labor unions to target secondary companies. So, for example, just to explain that, if you are an auto mechanic, often a Teamster or machinist, and you work at a car dealership, and they are trying to destroy your good union job at the bargaining table, you might think intuitively, well, we should put some pressure on this car dealership by going to the company that makes the auto parts and petitioning them to put pressure on my boss. Now, I think any normal person would consider that a form of free speech, but for some reason, the courts have decided over the years that that's not protected speech. And in fact, your union could be liable for damages in that circumstance. So, you know, when we're talking about a boycott brigade, we're talking about, you know, amplifying these struggles and creating public awareness away from the strike site, away from the factory. We're talking about going to a supermarket. You know, this is an idea which we developed in DSA, which the Bakers Union had no participation in. But it reflects, I think, our understanding that the community can provide forms of accountability to a bad employer who's abusing our sisters and brothers and comrades in our community in a way that labor unions cannot. And I think for that reason, it was incredibly important we did that.
So turning to IATSE and the OFNHP, the Kaiser Almost Strike, both of these unions reached out to DSA for solidarity. Portland's mainstream labor unions have not reached out to DSA in the past. What changed?
Well, we know that we're operating on a political terrain informed by decades of anti-communism, McCarthyism, red baiting, all that. And that's not good for the socialist movement or the labor movement, because historically, socialists and communists have been some of the most dedicated and effective labor organizers. Especially when we look at the transformative period during the strike wave of the early 1940s. And I think that, you know, that obviously carries into today. So it's understandable when we consider that historical context that mainstream unions would not think of socialists first when they are looking for community support. And also, I think we have to be realistic with ourselves as DSA members about why we may have not been able to surpass that historical precedent. And I think, as I mentioned earlier, that's because of the gap between the socialist movement and the labor movement. And if there is no known impact of DSA or socialists in workplace battles, strikes, why would you ever talk to DSA? How are we relevant? And I think that we have to be our own harshest critics as socialist organizers in that respect. Why would anyone reach out to us? What could we do? Why would we be valuable? And we should aspire to be as helpful as possible, and to, again, going back to this idea of expanding people's imagination. And I think that's what the Nabisco strike accomplished. I think that was very unusual. I don't think DSA in Portland, certainly it hasn't in other cities, but in Portland, we had not mobilized to that extent for a workplace fight before. And we had not led a community support campaign. And we did, and we made a difference with the Nabisco strike. It is undeniable that our presence transformed the outcome of that strike for insofar as the experience of that strike for the workers at that Portland plant was very different. So having even just one positive example to look at can make unions see DSA as a very valuable organizational.
So how is the preparation for this strike different than that of the Nabisco strike, and how is it the same?
Well, for the Nabisco strike, there wasn't much preparation at all before it began. We were pretty much building the plane as we were flying it, so to speak. And thank God that happened before the Kaiser strike, because we were fresh out of boot camp with a lot of new knowledge and skills and insights. And fortunately, we had some advance warning for the Kaiser strike. So there was a talk of a strike for, as far as I remember, maybe a good month, or at least for me as an outsider, I'm sure much longer than that internally, obviously. But, you know, talk of a strike for weeks. Then there was the strike authorization vote, which took some time. That was another few more weeks. Then there was the 10-day notice that the union gave before they walked out. So it was quite a long on-ramp to getting to the strike. And also, fortunately, because we have multiple DSA members connected to the healthcare industry and as staffers in unions in that industry, we were able to have more insider relationships, even with rank and filers, from the get-go. Whereas with Nabisco, we were forced to make those relationships just by showing up once they were already on the picket line.
Got it. Well, we're getting running out of time here, but and assuming, just a last couple questions, assuming the strike is off at Kaiser, off the table, how do you see DSA following up with the solidarity network that you developed and with the relationships you've developed with OFNHP members and with the Nabisco bakers?
Yeah, I mean, I think a couple things off the bat. You know, OFNHP rank and file leaders have committed or have already joined DSA purely based on the strike support work that so many of us contributed to. And so I think that is a strengthening of that bond. I think the other thing to add would be, you know, the contract may be in a tentative agreement and it may be ratified, but the struggles are not going to end. The staffing crisis that these employers like Kaiser have created through lean management techniques, which come from the automaking industry, the patient care crisis that they've generated by denying care and delaying care, those issues are not going to be fixed overnight. And they're not going to be fixed purely based on what's on a piece of paper, though a contract consolidates gains in a really important way. And so I think what we're going to see here are continued opportunities to engage the community in that struggle and to keep that door open to the shop floor that OFNHP members threw open with their very public strike authorization. So I'm hopeful that that the sort of community campaign piece will persist, and there's no organization in our town better prepared to support that than Portland DSA. So I'm excited for that in a big way. I think the last thing to say is this. I think working people in the union context are really waking up. You know, they're not sort of stayed in the same ways they were by the red baiting or the anti-communism that Laura described. You know, I think we're seeing it with my union. I'm a Teamster. We are on the verge of an historic victory. We're one of the few unions that directly get to elect our national, international union leadership. You know, let's not jinx it, but numbers are looking good that reformers will win, restore fight back, restore the strike to our union. And I think that just reflects a general change in disposition of the rank and file. They see the need to engage the community. They see the need to develop more forms of leverage. And again, I think we're just, you know, continue to be well positioned to support that.
Thoughts, Laura?
Yeah, and I think the relationships we made with Nabisco Bakers in particular have already shown that workplace consciousness is a gateway to class consciousness. We are doing a reading group of Teamster Rebellion with a lot of the bakers from Nabisco. And what would have happened if before their strike we had just, you know, cold emailed BCGGM and asked them if they want to join a reading group with us? Not much, I can tell you that. And now we are actually talking to them about how to build a better world, which I know is just one of the most like anodyne corny phrases of our movement, but I mean, like, literally that's what we're doing. And yeah, it's just it's great to have that connection, whereas I think in the past DSA has been, and the socialist movement has been, so isolated, just talking to ourselves, our own little tiny groups. But now we are connected and like blessed to be included in the network of people who are waging shop floor fights all the time.
Great. So how can our listeners connect with the DSA Labor Working Group for information and engagement?
Yeah, so great way is just to connect with us through our website. You can sign up to be contacted with about more information. You can also see when we're meeting next. That is tinyurl.com/PDXDSA labor. So a great way to connect with us.